This is The Source on KSTX, a product of the Texas Public Radio Newsroom. I'm David Martin Davies. You know the Constitution. You'd think by now we'd have that old piece of paper all figured out, but it's no exaggeration to say that almost every day there's some new wrinkle to the great American bargain that makes you go, huh? NPR's quiz master Peter Sagal takes a look at this Constitution by traveling across the nation on a Harley and telling the story of a modern-day America. The series is called Constitution USA with Peter Sagal. Kicks off tomorrow night at 8 on KLRN. We invite you to join our conversation about the Constitution. Any questions you might have about that document and how it fits into your life, give us a call, 614-8980. You could also email your questions and comments to thesource@tpr.org. And let us welcome our guest to The Source, Peter Sagal, writer, runner, rider of a two-wheel motorcycle, just an all-around amazing guy, host of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me. Peter, welcome to The Source. And Peter Sagal, are you there, sir?
I am. Sorry about that.
That was, well, wait. He wasn't there. That's okay.
Anticipation makes things greater. Sorry about
that. That's fantastic. No worries at all. Well, okay, let's talk about your program, Constitution USA with Peter Sagal on PBS. Comes on the air tomorrow. Why did you want to take on the Constitution?
Because it's the only national charter big enough for me to deal with. No, I mean, you know, I have this wonderful job, as you might know. I host this show called Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me, and I get to make fun of politicians in the news. But the thing is, whenever you make a joke about the president doing something goofy or Congress or whomever, you're really talking about the Constitution, which gave us Congress and the president. Whenever you talk about politics, you're talking about the Constitution. Whenever you talk about you know, people arguing in a bar or a lawsuit or anything, you're talking about the Constitution.
And you decided to take on this topic because you're the person who can untangle this furball that we call the understanding of the U.S. Constitution.
Yeah, I hope so anyway. I mean, it's hard to say to untangle it because it's not simple. And I think that one of the dangers we've actually faced is everybody reduces the Constitution to something very simple. The Constitution guarantees my rights to do whatever it is I want to do, be it have a lot of guns or be married to the person of the same sex or whatever it may be. And the Constitution is much more complex than that. The Constitution does a lot more than guarantee rights or put limits on the government. The Constitution creates the government. The Constitution created the president and Congress and all those people who drive us crazy, the justices of the Supreme Court. None of these elements would exist without the Constitution. And it's really important to understand how it was created and now that it is created, how it works, how it has evolved, because none of those other things exist without the government that is created by the Constitution protecting us, working as it's supposed to, guaranteeing those rights. I mean, it's all about the machinery and less about the principle.
So this was the document, the bargain that we drew up. And you talk about it in the program about how miraculous that these colonies, these that had broken away from Great Britain, managed to actually come together. And that was not an easy thing to do. We can't even get school districts to put aside their much less state semi-nations.
Yeah, and as we know from some of the things your governor in Texas likes to say, that whole union thing still is a dicey topic sometimes. This Akhil Rita Marr, who is one of the scholars we talked to in the documentary, says that to understand how amazing it was that these 13 colonies came together and agreed to be governed centrally, as opposed to independently, as they more or less had been up to that time, you have to imagine today's comparison to be all the nations of the world deciding spontaneously to vote themselves under the power of a world government. It was that unusual, that difficult to arrange.
And I have to be clear here that we are in no way endorsing one world government here on NPR.
Yes, I know. People were. We're not. But I mean, if you consider that unlikely, right? And I think we all do that could ever happen. Then that's how unlikely it was that these 13 colonies would vote to hand so much of their own authority over to a central government. That was his point. And it really was an extraordinary thing. The other thing he pointed out, and this is something I really came to appreciate, was it was the first time in all of human history that such a large and democratic group of people, I say democratic with a small d, had the opportunity to vote as to how they would govern themselves. In the entire range of human history leading up to it, even those strange bursts of democracy that we point to, like in Athenian Greece or the Roman Republic, that was basically a group of elites deciding to share power amongst themselves. The democratic government of Athens had slaves. The government of Rome, you know, citizenship was only for Romans. Everybody else was either a slave or a subject. This was the first real experiment in mass democracy, and it's changed the world.
But even by today's standards, those were elites because, of course, we had slaves there, and also it left out women.
Yeah, it did. And, you know, and by no means, whenever I or anybody in the documentary praises the Constitution, do we ever forget its flaws. Not only did the Constitution, not only did the people who wrote and voted on the Constitution own slaves, although, interestingly enough, some free blacks did vote in the ratification election, as did some women. It was really up to the state. But not only did the people who wrote the Constitution have slaves, many of them, but the Constitution implicitly endorsed slavery and made slavery a part of the American nation in a permanent way until the Civil War came along to finally end it. So let's not forget that while, you know, it gave a continent group of people self-government, it also condemned millions of other people to slavery for generations. So we look at these things. We know it was flawed, and we dedicate ourselves to the continual task of making it better, of extending its protections to more people, of making it, you know, to use the words of Martin Luther King to cash that promissory note that was written many years ago.
So you hop on a Harley and you ride mm-hmm. the highways and byways of the United States looking for folks who tell the story of the modern day Constitution. And who did you come across?
Oh, so many people. I'll start with the Texas example. We went to Tyler, Texas, and we talked to the Lopez family. Now, the Lopezes, when they were children, were the plaintiffs in a case called Plyler v. Doe that established that undocumented immigrants have the right to a public education through high school. And we went with them to their old high school to watch a game. And the Lopezes are now an extremely happy, healthy, big family in Tyler that contribute hugely to the local economy and you know, are so much part of the American fabric. And you see both the process by which undocumented immigrants at that time were included in We the People and how that changed our nation, and also the benefit we get from that, that by allowing these people to benefit from our country by virtue of their residence here, our country has certainly benefited from them, their work, their good nature, their you know economic contributions, their presence. And that, I think, is part of the American story, that we have extended that definition of We the People first to African Americans, then to women, then to immigrants from various countries. It's been slow, and there have been, you know, backsliding, there have been backward
yeah,
steps.
And these are not settled issues. Just today, the Heritage Foundation issued a report saying that comprehensive immigration reform with a pathway to citizenship would cost the United States $11 trillion over the next 50 years. And so there are still many people out there that dispute these issues or say that was okay back then, but now it doesn't mean that. And we can't do that anymore. Things are changed.
Well, you know, things have changed. Things have changed in a conservative direction. Things have changed in the liberal direction. Whatever direction you're going in now, there's a good chance it will reverse. You know, I mean, for a long time, this country decided that segregation was okay. It was constitutional. Then it decided it wasn't. I mean, one of the things you learn about the Constitution is that it doesn't settle arguments. There's nothing in the Constitution about undocumented immigrants. So the decision in Plyler v. Doe was a human decision made by justices responding to the facts and the mores of the time. That decision could be reversed. We could decide, no, that undocumented immigrants are not we the people. If that's what we as a nation decide, then that's where we'll go. That will be our constitutional order. I mean, that's why I have a problem with people who say we should only obey the original intent of the Constitution.
Yes, I still have British soldiers living in my house I can't get rid of.
Yeah, I know.
I keep showing them the Constitution saying they're not supposed to do that. But the other thing is, let's talk about guns, which is a new program that will be on NPR. No, it won't be.
No.
So guns.
Gun talk.
It's just one of those things. People, when they say the rights of you know, to have guns, the right to bear arms. They want no limitations on that. But we have limitations on many of our rights, including free speech.
Yeah, we do. And that's why, without saying anything about what would be the wisest course to pursue on guns, that's actually a really good example, because a lot of people say, well, the Second Amendment demands this, or according to the Second Amendment, I should be able to buy a machine gun, or, well, the Second Amendment says well-regulated militia, so I should be able to keep it from buying a machine gun. The Second Amendment is not irrelevant, but it's not what's keeping us from changing the law if we want to. The case Heller versus D.C. that established a constitutional right for an individual to have a handgun in their home, which is the first time the Second Amendment was ever read that way, left a lot of room for us as a free people to decide how we want to regulate guns, if we want to regulate guns. And as you know, living in Texas, there are different states with very different opinions on that. They're free to do that. We as a nation are free to regulate guns more than we have, like that was attempted to do by President Obama's background checks bill. We democratically decided not to do that. It failed in the Senate. We can change our mind.
But our free speech, comparing it to our free speech rights, you know, I can't say whatever I want on the radio. Of course,
nope.
We have limitations on, nasty words or anything.
Right.
I can say libel someone or, you know, there's certain things you can't
exactly
do. And that's because we have to have a society that functions at a certain level or things that we accept
right.
as the norm.
Right. Our example you just gave just is a perfect example of what I'm talking about. We are free under the First Amendment to still govern ourselves in terms of what's free speech and what's not. We can make our decision that while it's valuable for me to be able to say bad things about the president, it's not valuable for me to say the seven words that I can't say on the radio. We've made that decision democratically. We live with it. We can make decisions about the Second Amendment. We've made them about the Fourth. We've made them about the Fifth and the Sixth and the Seventh and the Eighth. Why not the Second? It's really a question not so much of what the Constitution demands that we do, but what we choose to do as a self-governing people.
And we constantly – is it a living document? That seems to be the big debate now on the Supreme Court.
The living document versus the original document usually is a stand-in for liberal versus conservative.
That's a strict reading of what the original intent.
Yeah. Usually the people who want a strict reading of the original intent are arguing for a more conservative result, and the other side a more liberal result. And what I think is that you can argue that we should only read the Constitution as the document was intended to mean by its founders, if we can figure that out using scholarship and Ouija board.
But even they don't know what they figured out, because it wasn't that long after they passed the Constitution we had the Alien and Sedition Act, and we were
exactly
putting people...
Exactly right. The same people who wrote the First Amendment immediately violated it. So it's hard to sense their intent. But here's what I think. You can argue we should do that. You can't argue we have done that, because all through American history, we have changed our mind about what the Constitution means in issues large and small. At one time, we thought the Constitution meant we could have segregation. At another time, we decided we shouldn't. We have constantly changed our interpretation of the Constitution to suit where we were as a people. So you can say we should have done that, but you can't say we haven't.
All right. Peter Sagal, host of Wait, Wait, Don't Tell Me at NPR, also the host of the new The Constitution on PBS. We'll be watching you motor across the U.S., telling the stories of Americans as it relates to the Constitution. This is The Source on KSTX, and we'll be right back after this pledge break and the news. Thank you so much, Peter.
Thank you. It's great to talk to you.